Hey, welcome to the show. It's Stephanie Staples with Your Life Unlimited, and we're talking about the man in the mirror today, or the woman, as the case may be, because the only person that we can change is ourselves. And at Your Life Unlimited, we're always trying to bring you some ideas for inspiration to make yourself a little bit happier, a little bit healthier. And today's a fit tip brought to you by Vivacity Fitness, 561 St. Anne's, is to make yourself an upbeat or motivating playlist to get you inspired to exercise or help you push past a hard part of your workout. Most people don't realize that energy comes in waves and spurts, and that music can help you get through your second or third wind. I think it's also a cool idea to name your playlist something pretty cool. You could call it inspiration, or you could call it shifting the mood to get home from work, or something like that. That would give you that clue that that's your shift. Music can do that for you. So loving that Michael Jackson tune, Man in the Mirror. It's all about us and creating the life that we want. So I'm excited to talk to you today because I'm going to be speaking with Sean Stratton. He is the president of the Live More Group and the author of Teams on the Edge, Stories and Lessons from Wilderness Expeditions. And I was asking a good friend of mine this week, I asked him this question: what's the craziest thing you've ever done? And he was quiet for a bit, and then he thought, and then he mentioned what that incident was. And I said, well, how long ago did that happen? And he said, oh, it was probably about 30 years ago. And I thought, wow, that's 30 years since you've done something crazy. And he said, yeah, that's it. So I thought it was kind of an interesting question. How long has it been since you've done something crazy? Now, I mean, crazy is going to mean different things to different people. It might mean jumping out of a plane, or it might just mean showing up at a group that you don't usually go to, or talking to somebody you wouldn't normally. But I'm here to encourage you today to think about what it would look like as this year winds up and the new year begins, to add a little bit more calculated crazy to your list. And I thought that'd be a great fit for our talk with Sean later in the hour, because this guy has done lots of things that I think a lot of people would think are crazy. So I'm really looking forward to talking to him. Our sock drive is still on. If you're driving by CGOB, please pop a few socks in our bin. We're trying to collect 1,001 socks for those in need, and you can help with just a few bucks. So pop into the station, drop off your socks, and keep some Tootsies warm this winter. We're going to be back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. Welcome back to Your Life Unlimited. Sending a big shout out to Tiber River, 408 Academy, 1650 Keniston Road. Their website, tiberriver.ca. Get your shopping needs and esthetician things done there. They are treating you great. I am excited to welcome Sean Stratton to the show. He's the author of Teams on the Edge, Stories and Lessons from Wilderness Expeditions. Sean has 15 years leading over 2,000 days of wilderness leadership expeditions in some of the world's harshest environments. So I don't know if you heard us earlier in the show, Sean, but I was talking about doing crazy things. And I'm just thinking that some of these things I've been reading about that you've done, you know, a lot of people might put that in that category.
Yeah. I like how you said it's all kind of individual and perspective oriented, and yeah, for sure. I think I would probably have done some things that people would think are crazy, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that have done crazy things that that they don't think are crazy, but I would think are crazy.
So this sense of adventure, do you think that people are born with it, or it develops? Do you think it's contagious? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. It's funny because, you know, people say to me often, you know, you must have grew up with such outdoorsy parents, and you must have been camping every weekend and that. And no, I think I went camping once in my life with my parents.
Wow.
My father always said to me, oh, I hate adventure. You know, I get enough adventure at work being a business owner, and I don't want to venture on my vacation. And
oh, interesting.
He's a chartered accountant by trade, and I have two brothers that are both chartered accountants, and they're adventure seekers and travelers now as well. But so it's interesting that they're, I think I probably get it a bit more from my mother than anybody if it is hereditary. But I think it's probably a bit of hereditary there, but I think I don't know. For me, it comes back to a lot of my upbringing in terms of my parents just instilling a lot of confidence in me to do what I wanted and kind of putting that confidence out there and taking that to its own heights.
So the people that you've worked with, people who sign up for these wilderness adventures, are they stretching themselves? Are they typically adventurous people, or are they people that are just trying to do something that's out of their comfort zone? Like, what type of people sign up for this?
Most of them are stretching themselves. You know, most of the expeditions I led, a lot of them were college students, and some were adults that had some backpacking kind of wilderness experience. But, you know, I had some people that signed up for 70-day semester in the wilderness, and they'd never camped before.
That's not for the faint of heart. 70 days in the wilderness. Yowza.
Yeah, I've led two 70-plus day expeditions in that time.
Crazy. That does sound crazy to me. So what's been the biggest surprise, I guess, for you leading expeditions like that, the changes that you see? I imagine you see amazing changes over people in that length of time.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love about the longer expeditions is that you really do get to have an impact. You know, a lot of guided trips out there and kind of outdoor education programs are, you know, a few days, a weekend, maybe a week long, and you're hardly touching the surface then. And you actually get to, there are life-changing moments people have, but you actually get to see the change and people learning the skills and then utilizing the skills, whether it's, you know, learning how to cook in the backcountry or leadership skills and how to diffuse a conflict. And it's really neat to see that. You know, I think just seeing people, that hadn't spent much time either in the wilderness or with people working in teams and seeing them come together and shining. And it's really neat on these expeditions. I would tell my groups that, you know, today is like day one of a new society. And these people don't have to bring whatever baggage they have at home with them. And typically on the trips I was leading that most people didn't know each other beforehand. And so it gives people almost a new life while they're on a trip to be like, hey, I don't know what you do at home, what you're like at home, but this is who you are right here, and that's why I'm going to accept you, and let's go, and let's have some fun.
So do most people sign up solo, or do they come with a buddy or partner?
Most solo, yeah. Very, very rare on the expeditions that I would have. Every now and then there would be a couple maybe that knew each other, but most of them solo.
That's interesting in itself. Like, there's probably a lot of psychology behind that, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, one of the main companies I was working for kind of really encouraged that for those reasons that you know, you're not coming with any baggage. And, you know, when you get out in the wilderness, it really strips you down to your core and you don't have anything to hide behind like we do in most of our society now, between whether it's clothes or makeup or alcohol or whatever. You get out there, we're pretty much all wearing the same clothes, eating the same food, sleeping in the same place. And
I'm guessing, you know, when you're carrying your supplies for 70 days or whatever it is, you're not carrying a lot of alcohol with you, I'm guessing.
No, zero, actually. It becomes more of a safety thing at times.
I think that with injuries and, I was reading about your tents mauled by bears and your Arctic and round-the-world adventures. I mean, clearly this experiential education is where it's at. It's what you believe in. How can those of us who aren't quite ready to sign up for an expedition like this bring some level of craziness in quotes or adventure or stretching into our life?
Yeah, that's a great question too. I think, you know, for me, I like the definition of adventure is it wouldn't be an adventure if you knew what the ending was going to be.
Oh, I like
that.
That
you know, that goes in so many ways. That's not, you don't have to be cold or wet or in elements to have that. That could be, you know, going to a Toastmasters for the first time and trying your first public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that could be just doing something that you've maybe always wanted to do but haven't had the chance to do. It could be traveling to a new location. It could be calling that friend that you haven't spoken to in years because you had a conflict that you don't even remember what it was about. And, you know, that's an adventure because you don't know how that phone call is going to go, but you're probably going to feel a lot better once you've done it.
I really love the definition. It wouldn't be an adventure if you didn't know what the end would be. Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you knew what the ending was going to be, wouldn't it be an adventure? So,
yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I think that just drives the excitement of adventure for me because, I don't know, it is something that I think it's deeply rooted in my core of, I don't want every day to be the same, you know, and so many people are like that and they don't even call it adventure, but it really is.
Well, you know what? I think that would be a cool thing to put on the virtual to-do list or the real actual write down to-do list. Like, I'm going to create, what would it be like to say, I'm going to create 12 adventures, you know, in the next 12 months so that you are purposeful and deliberate and intentional about looking for and noticing opportunities to have an adventure, something that you don't know what the ending's going to be like once a month.
That's great. Yeah, I really like that. Yeah, I think that would be excellent. I think that gets people, you know, out of their comfort zone. And I also like the quote I heard many years ago that says that, you know, the greatest learning happens on the edge of your comfort zone.
Nice.
And I think they go hand in hand.
Nice. You know, one of the things that when I am reading about your adventures and stuff, in our society, I think I'm not the only one, but I'm really comfortable being comfortable. And I'm uncomfortable in being in discomfort. So when I think about, you know, being cold and wet and tired and sore, that's not pleasant to me, really, even though I know there's some sort of adventure attached to it. So how do you help people get past the feelings of discomfort, I guess, is the word?
Yeah, I think, you know, and wilderness expedition has kind of a connotation that you're pushing your limit all the time and uncomfortable all the time, and that's not it at all. It's on the trips we used to call it camping in style, and it's not even just on a wilderness expedition. It could be on any adventure that you're having, that I think it's important that you have the skills, or you have someone to, you know, either guide you or teach you the skills that you're going to need to go into that adventure. And so if it is maybe public speaking, it's you're learning the skills to do public speaking, and that's going to help relieve a lot of that anxiety. Or if it is talking to that first coworker that you have a conflict with, you know, learning some conflict resolution skills, that's going to give you. So if it's camping in the wilderness, learning how to dress in layers, learning what equipment to bring, having people with you that can help you with that can make that comfortable. Because, yeah, I also agree that, you know, it's very hard to learn if you're totally uncomfortable and scared all the time.
Right, for sure. Well, even simple things like, you know, so we're in Manitoba here in December. I'm calling you in Newfoundland, so I'm sure the weather's not balmy over there either. But, mm-hmm. you know, for those of us to figure out how to get past this weather excuse all the time and just be able to enjoy what's going on out there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's the temperatures that you guys get out there, you know, is nothing that we get here in Newfoundland. We have our own challenges, but, you know, I can't imagine living in that day to day. And I have experienced those temperatures on brief moments on some, you know, expeditions and that. But day to day, that seems mind-boggling to me that you could live in that condition. And you guys do it every day, and you don't blink an eye at it.
Oh, well, sometimes we blink. But anyway, that's our challenge, right? To figure out how to get over it, under it, through it, and enjoy a. It's too long of a winter if you're going to squawk about it every day, that's for sure. So, okay, we're going to take
And you prepare for it. You know, you've got the bright clothing, and you go out the door, and you're probably not cold all the time because you're dressed for it.
Yep, and there's fun things to do inside, too. Okay,
we're
going to take a break. When we come back, more with Sean Stratton on Your Life Unlimited. It's Stephanie Staples with Your Life Unlimited quick tip of the week. I was at a recent event, and this guest commented that she would like to join this organization, but said, "I'm a person that jumps in with both feet, and I get really involved in the organizations I join. I just don't know if I can make time for this one, although I really would like to be a part of it." This sparked a brief but important conversation where I shared that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. You can come every week and jump in with both feet and do everything. Or you can come every second week or once a month and not volunteer for roles yet and just take it as it comes. It was like the light went on. "Oh," she said, "I never thought about it that way. I thought if I couldn't do it full on, I couldn't do it at all." And the next week she joined, but on her own terms. So I'm just wondering, what are you missing because you have an all or nothing attitude? And consider what you could have to gain if you join in, even just partway, into something that interests you. Maybe not at a level 10 commitment, but maybe at a level 6. Think about it. It doesn't always have to be all or nothing. And we're back on Your Life Unlimited. It's Stephanie Staples, and we are talking with Sean Stratton. He is the president of the Live More Group, and doesn't that just sound great? Live More? Who doesn't want to live more? Just give you a big shout out to First Impressions Hair and Skin Team, 1631 St. Mary's. They are also collecting socks for us, so if you're in the south end of the city, feel free to drop off a pair or two or 10 of socks for our cities less fortunate, something little that we can do. If you haven't been to a Mo Mondays yet, oh my gosh, you are missing something. So the next one is January 6th. Check out momondays.com. We are hosting it at Rumors now. It's a rockin' awesome event, and it gives you a little bit of inspiration, motivation, and more ideas and from a plethora of incredible speakers. So check us out, momondays.com/Winnipeg. And you'll find out all the information there. Best $10 for a Monday night you can buy. Okay, Sean, I was having a good time reading your book. I was glad I was reading it and not side by side with you on that adventure. Tell us about the $30,000 blister.
Yeah, that story took place in the Yukon, up in the Tombstone Mountain Range. near the pretty close to the Arctic Circle off the Dempster Highway. And blisters are a common thing when you're out backpacking, and I've seen many over the years. And this was the student, had some blisters throughout the trip that we've been monitoring. The trip in total was about 28 days. And on about day 20 or so, part of the expedition, we send the students off for, I think, 4 or 5 days we did at that point, on their own without the instructor. So they don't go off solo. They go off in groups of five. And a big part of that is that we're teaching on these expeditions. We're teaching wilderness skills and leadership. And the best ways to really get people to practice what they've been learning is to let them go on their own. And it's a very nerve-wracking experience for these instructors who are, ultimately responsible for their safety.
I bet.
They've been trained in emergency procedures and some basic emergency first aid. But, if I'm hiking behind them and I'm quiet, I'm still not going to let them walk off a cliff. But when I'm not there, they've got to make a real
good of you.
And use their real judgment. And it's a fantastic part about these expeditions and the learning that happens because, I was speaking to a CEO of an engineering company recently, and he was having a hard time with his management making decisions. And he said, I don't want to be making these decisions. Like, they should be making these decisions. And they keep waiting for him to make the call. I was like, you need to let them go off the cliff without you. And it's really hard in this day and age, especially with social media, or not social media, but, our cell phones constantly on, and we're always able to be in touch. So anyway, they were off on their own for 4 or 5 days without us. And the student had some blisters, and we've been monitoring them, and it looked like one on her toe was kind of had some minor infection, localized infection, and we wanted to, we told her what to do to keep it warm, or soak in warm water at the end of the day and keep it clean and treat it. And they went off. And a couple days later, about 2 days into it, we'd heard the students coming towards our instructor camp. We had kind of gone to where they were going to meet us. We went there in 2 days, what they were doing in 4 or 5. And we were setting up to start our paperwork and do some wrap-up stuff. And we'd heard them coming through the down the river valley yelling, "Hey, bear, hey, bear," which is what we do up there when we're hiking. So we notify the bears that we're coming, so they take off. And our hearts, as my co-instructors, our hearts just sank because we were like, we're not supposed to hear them for 2 more days. And they came into camp, and it was 2 of them, and we were thinking, gee, what's going on? Who died? What happened? You just think the worst. And the other thing I was thinking about was, like, why is there only 2 of them? We told them to go, don't leave anywhere without a minimum of 3 people because of being in bear country. That's kind of our protocol, and it's, very few grizzly attacks have happened with groups 3 or more. And there was only 2 of them. And quickly we talked to them and found out that they said, oh, it's Sally, it's her toe. And I was like, oh, whew, only her toe, that's great. And they kind of went through some of her symptoms and that she's, aches and pains and she's got a fever that's rising. And I was like, okay, that's not good. And is there anything else with her toe? And they're like, oh, and there's this, there just seems to be this red streak from her toe to her knee. And if anybody knows anything about infection, that's a sign of severe systemic infection that's traveling through the bloodstream. Yeah, very, very bad. And then I was, why is it only 2 of you? And they were like, well, the other person that could potentially come with us had sprained her ankle that day and would have slowed us down. And so we decided just that we were going to scream as loud as we could and just run. And they ran for about 5 hours to get to our camp. And the end of it all, that student ended up having to get a helicopter out to Dawson, and we had to get the private jet, the medevac jet up from Whitehorse, and she ended up spending 4 days in hospital. She had that severe infection. The doctor said, she was probably hours away from that infection going into her heart or her lungs, causing complete heart failure. And at the end of the day, I was, gripping about why did this happen? How did this happen? How did it get to this? What could I have done differently? And I later learned through some of the students on the trip that this particular student had been treated for anorexia up until weeks before the course, where the company had a policy that you couldn't be in any kind of treatment program for up to a year before you take these courses because it's just not safe. And she went to a different doctor to get her medical form and didn't disclose any of this information to us. And
wow. So that is one of your lessons, right? And you tie all of your stories to leadership lessons, and one of your lessons is disclosure.
Yeah, and, you know, it's amazing on how, you know, this is obviously a life and death situation that with this out, this information could have been very bad. And, you know, I translate that to your home environment, to your work environment. You know, what do you don't know about your folks on your team? And sure, you don't need to know their whole life story and history, but if there's something that's affecting you that could potentially affect your performance on your team, it's really important that you let them know that, because, well, a lot of times they can, A, help you out, or B, you know, give you something else that's not going to allow that to affect it, not necessarily that you're going to be off a team or out of a job. So I think, yeah, disclosure is a big point to that.
Sure, sometimes what we don't know can hurt us just as much or more than what we do know, for sure. Okay, we're going to take a break. Back in a moment on Your Life Unlimited. Okay, we're back. It's Stephanie Staples. And if you are looking for more information like what you're hearing today, check out Your Life Unlimited. Find me on Facebook, Stephanie Staples. And if you're thinking about doing some coaching, you know what? Now is the right time. YourLifeUnlimited.ca. We'd love to have you be a part of our community. And motivation, inspiration, it's not just a one-hit wonder. You need to continually immerse yourself in it in all sorts of different ways, by what you read, by what you write, by what you listen to, by what you do, and by who you hang with as well. So I'm having a good time hanging with Sean Stratton. He's the author of Teams on the Edge, Stories and Lessons from 2,000 Days, all spread out, not in a row, of course, in the wilderness expeditions. Sean, I love how you tie all your stories in with lessons. So let's talk about some of those other key learning points that you teach people in your sessions.
You know, one of the first story I talk about an expedition in India where I had a student break his leg. He had an open fracture with the bone sticking out his tibia.
Thanks for putting that picture in there, too, color and everything.
Yeah, I really got it. Really wanted people to feel feel what I was feeling.
Yeah.
when I saw that, and you know, the lesson I take from that incident was just knowing your role on your team. And when that incident happened, and as the leader, I thought, oh no, it's all my responsibility to take care of this student and get him out of here. And quickly I realized that this was way bigger than me, and I couldn't do this on my own. And at the end of the ordeal, once we did get him out after 19 hours in the mountains in the Himalayas, got an Indian Air Force rescue chopper in. I was overcome with emotion and started to cry, and I realized quickly that I was so overcome with emotion because I was just so proud of our team and that how everybody just took on their role and they knew what to do. And if they didn't, they asked what to do. And I'm amazed with the teams that I work with that so many people are on a team because they're placed there, but a lot of them don't really know their role. And you're not going to be an effective member unless you know your role. And if you don't know it, you've got to ask, because you're going to be a lot more effective and you're going to enjoy yourself a lot more when you know what you can do and how you can contribute to that team. And it may not be a big flashy role at the time. It may just be kind of a worker bee role. But it's what's most important is that you do know your role and that you do it to the best of your ability. And like I like to say, the rule, the ATS rule I use a lot, and that's the and then some rule. And how you can be the best teammate is doing your part and then some.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. And then some. That's a great idea. And you know what? Also, what I hear you saying is that you don't always have to be the hero, right? Even though you were the leader in this particular circumstance, you don't always have to be the hero by yourself. There's lots of other people you can count on.
Oh, for sure. You know, if you take on that kind of mentality, then you're not on a team at all. You're on a one person.
And this doesn't matter whether you're talking about, I don't think, an expedition or a family team or a work team or a community team. I think that's great advice to know your role. You talk about expedition behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is kind of a terminology we use on our expeditions. And that's, you know, again, it's a lot about doing your part and then some. It's being that teammate that you want to be. And this plays so true in any office environment. Sometimes I call it expedition behavior for the corporate world. And it's, you know, so many office conflicts I find in the business world or even in the family world are caused by the little things that build up. And it's not usually, oh, we lost that proposal, we're in a major conflict now, or, you know, the market's gone down and now we're in a conflict. It's usually that person's been doing that thing that's been bugging me for days and days or weeks or months, or they haven't been pulling their weight, or I'm not really sure what to do because we don't have a structure. And having this expedition behavior is, you know, being that teammate you want to be. And a lot of people, you know, in conflicts, I'll ask themselves, you know, is your behavior what you would want someone else to be? And they actually take a closer look at themselves and they realize that, no, actually my behavior, yeah, it's probably maybe be a little destructive and I could probably be a better teammate. And it's doing those things without asking, you know. And, you know, I tell people, ask people, how many times have people had conflict over who's emptying the garbage because they've had to do it more than once this week and no one in the office picks up to do it or no one at home is doing it besides them? It's those little things. And so, you know, have an expedition behavior and taking on your term, call it what you want, but it's being that teammate and doing your part and then some.
It goes back to our Man in the Mirror song from the top of the hour, I think, right? Asking ourselves what we can do to change us to be better. So then you talk, this is different too. You talk about packing wisely and removing distractions.
I like to boil this one down to, you know, when you are leading a team and if you do get to pick the team, and not even if you do pick the team, if you're on a team and you're leading it, you really need to, what we like to call, weed your garden early. And it sounds a little harsh, but, you know, not everybody is meant to be on a team or maybe on your team, and maybe they're just in the wrong place. And a lot of times, you know, we are people, and it's really hard to have those challenging conversations with people that maybe aren't being helpful or even worse, being destructive to your team. And, you know, if you have people that are destructive to your team, do your best to try to incorporate them and make them a positive member. But if everything you've tried is not working, then you need to do your team and that person a service by removing them from your team. And so the sooner you can do that in terms of, you know, weed your garden early, the better it's going to be for everybody. And that, you know, a lot of times involves some frank conversations. And in my situation in the book, we had the student that just his behavior just was not acceptable, and he was threatening to people, and people were in tears regularly from things he was saying to them, and it was ruining their experience. And it was not just ruining one or two, but it was almost taking down the whole team with them. And eventually, after a lot of intervention that we've tried, that we actually had to remove him from the expedition because his behavior just was too detrimental, which is really challenging, because behavior is not something that, you know, if he hit somebody or was drinking or, you know, doing drugs,
something
then
tangible.
Easy, okay.
Yeah,
but this was, you know, you have to document all the behaviors, but eventually it saved the expedition, and people ended up having, you know, the time of their life because we removed him.
Yeah, but that negative energy can pull down a team, and I think everybody's had that experience for sure. So sometimes it's about having those difficult conversations. Well, Sean, you've traveled the world, and for those of us who haven't quite put out that many air miles on as you, what places really stood out for you that maybe might surprise us that, oh, if you could just go to one place, go to this place?
Yeah, I don't know. I like to kind of boil it down to kind of cultural and wilderness when people ask me my favorite places and where to go. And I think combination of both of those would probably be India. India is just a fascinating country. Excuse me there. And India is just a fascinating country. And, you know, the neat thing about the culture and the mountains and the wilderness there is that they blended so well together, and that there's so many remote villages you travel through as you go into the Himalayas and into the mountains, as well as the rest of India. And I haven't traveled all over India, but I've got a bit of a chunk of it.
There's a few places left for you to try.
Yeah. India is just a great kick in the pants, and some people say you'll either love it or hate it, or love it and hate it.
Oh, interesting.
And the wilderness-wise, I really, really love Alaska and the Yukon. I don't think Canadians realize what a treasure we have up there in Alaska, or in the Yukon, and definitely Americans in Alaska, that it's such, you know, some of the most remote areas and beautiful areas in the world. And, you know, there's surprisingly a lot less remote areas than we think are around these days.
Sean, I got to cut you off here. I got to cut you off because we got to take a break back in a minute on Your Life Unlimited. I've had a great time talking with Sean Stratton. If you want to check out his website, seanstratton.ca and yourlifeunlimited.ca, we'd both love to have you be part of our community. Sean, if there was just one thing that you could let people know, what would that be?
I would say follow your priorities. I think life is about priorities, and if you're following your priority, or what you did today is what you're prioritizing, and if you're following the priorities that you set out, then you're going to be happy and you're going to achieve your goals.
Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing your talents with us. Thanks for listening. As usual, it's Stephanie Staples encouraging you to live your life unlimited.